Welcome to the Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. I'm the creator and host, Andrew Rizza. The Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast was created to discuss the ever-changing landscape in the healthcare industry, focusing on sports medicine, physical therapy, athletic training, and sports science. Each week, we will discuss the barriers that healthcare professionals face and how we as individuals can collaborate to make the listeners better understand the healthcare industry for a better patient and athlete experience. Now, on to the show. On this week's Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast, I'd like to welcome Dr. Lee Riley. Lee is a licensed physical therapist with 28 years of experience in the physical therapy and rehabilitation space. He received a Bachelor of Science degree in physical therapy from Northeastern University in 1996, a Master of Education degree in exercise science from Louisiana State University in 2002, and a Doctor of Philosophy degree in physical therapy from Nova Southern University in 2011. Lee is an instructor for the Department of Physical Therapy, Movement and Rehabilitation Sciences, and the College of Professional Studies at Northeastern University in Boston, Massachusetts. His academic teaching, clinical practice, and research interests focus on development and promotion of evidence-informed management and rehabilitation approaches for adults with musculoskeletal spinal disorders. Lee has served as the program lead for the Willis Knighton Spine Institute in Shreveport, Louisiana from 1998 to 2017. During this time, he provided administrative supervision and clinical leadership for an interdisciplinary team of healthcare professionals from the fields of physical therapy, rehabilitation nursing, social services, and behavioral therapy in operations and promotion of a CARF-accredited outpatient medical rehabilitation program for adults with musculoskeletal spine disorders. Under Lee's guidance and leadership, the Willis Knighton Spine Institute grew from a novel pilot program and developed into an integrated model of care-promoting biopsychosocial management and rehabilitation principles through the Willis Knighton Health Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation. Over the last several years, Lee has assumed many roles and was most recently promoted to expand his leadership role as the Assistant Director for Outpatient Services in the Willis Knighton Health Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation. In his new position, Lee leads a diverse team of healthcare professionals, including physical therapists, occupational therapists, speech and language pathologists, rehabilitation nurses, athletic trainers, social workers, and behavioral therapists, and the operation and promotion of the Willis Knighton Sports Medicine Program and all the CARF accredited outpatient medical rehabilitation programs offered by Willis Knighton Health throughout the Shreveport and Boise City communities. Lee has a passion for teaching, promoting, and practicing a patient-centered approach to healthcare delivery that integrates evidence-based standards of care with patient values, preferences, and expectations to develop cost-efficient and clinically effective rehabilitation programs for the person served. Now, on to the show. Welcome back to Episode 8, Part 2 of Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast with the Assistant Director of Outpatient Services for the Willis Knighton Healthcare System, Dr. Lee Riley. In this episode, we discuss topics of career development, mentorship, reimbursement in healthcare, and the importance of providing quality care. We discuss the need of young professionals to provide their worth and gain experience in order to advance in their careers. We touch on the challenges of reimbursement in the healthcare industry and the potential for value-based payment structures. The conversation moves on to the importance of mentorship and the role it plays in shaping young professionals, and we then close out our conversation with a reflection on an evolving nature of careers and the importance of making a positive impact on others. Now on to part two.
It is very interesting, and I go back to that. You know, when we got out of school, I mean, I was making next to nothing. Lucky we actually survived, but I kept working harder and doing more and trying to provide more. And, you know, I talk to young students all the time about career, you know, the career fairs they might have. And we discussed, you know, what do you want to do when you get older? And I said, you know what? It's very rare that you get out of school and you're going to be making six figures or making, you know, 250 grand a year or whatever it may be. You know, the money will come at some point, but you got to prove your net worth. You have to be able to prove what you can bring to the table to make people say, you know what, I want to go see Lee Riley. He's the best spine specialist, best spine rehabilitation specialist in the community. I want to go see him. And then you get all those referrals for those. So I think it really goes back to putting your time in. You have to get experience. Just because you have a DPT doesn't mean you know everything. It's like, because the physical therapy community kind of put that, you know, you know, level of education, you know, to a higher level of education, I feel like smarter people are getting in, but they may not be better clinically. And I find like you have to do the clinical, you know, your due diligence in the clinical realm to be able to get better, to be able to make that, you know, jump in salary or to that next level of leadership or even clinical specialist. So it is very challenging.
I mean, I think they have to balance, you know, the expectations. I mean, I think the idea is, you know, I completely support what the profession did, you know, and their vision, you know, of having autonomous, you know, doctors of physical therapy who patients can have direct access to, who can be frontline providers, you know, for, you know, adults, you know, children, student athletes or so forth. I mean, I think that's great. You know, the idea is, though, the reimbursement has not
caught up
the pace.
Yeah.
You know, and so you get out and now these, you know, these young students, you know, these young professionals, they have $100,000, $150,000 in loans, and they want to get out and they want to pay off those loans as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. So they want as much money, you know, as you could possibly give them. And then, you know, so you hire them, give them a sign-on bonus. And then, you know, after that 2-year commitment is done, they're jumping ship.
Yeah.
They're moving on to the next company. Because another company is going to give them a sign-on bonus, you know, so they'll jump ship and they'll move around. And then, so you know, like I said, when I counsel them, I say, "Well, you know, is this a job for you or is this a career?"
Yeah.
You know, if you want to build a career and you want to build a career in this community, you know, then these are the steps. Like I can, you know, I can help coach you along and I can mentor you, and these are the steps that you have to take, and you know, and you have to be willing to put in the work and do that. And that's, you know, that is lacking right now.
Yeah. And I think the reimbursement, it's going to be a while before that, if it even catches up. I just think the insurance companies are obviously in business for the insurance companies, and the patient is shouldering more of the cost now, which sucks. You know, I was talking to Dr. Gill about this and about, you know, where's healthcare going? And he said, you know what, a lot of people say, should we go and do a you know, like social medicine like Canada? And he goes, quite frankly, he's like, what happens in Canada is that, you know, he's like, I have some colleagues that work in Canada. The last 2 months of the year, the last month of the year, they shut down because they've reached their maximum for paying out for surgeries. And then do you really want a month or 3 weeks where you can't provide any surgical procedures? He's like, I don't think so. But really, socialized medicine, is that really the answer? Or is it, you know, the insurance company releasing more funds to be able to try to prevent a lot of these other procedures that aren't like the last, you know, 10% of your life where they're putting most of the money, right? Do you want to provide better service now for preventative medicine techniques so people don't need to have those higher cost, you know, procedures? So for instance, if someone came in to see you and they had, you know, a meniscal injury, and you said, you know, we can do a preventative procedure, but we also can try therapy for 6 to 8 weeks. And if that works, then why don't we do that? And then, oh, we're going to need imaging, but we're going to hold off on the imaging because that's too expensive. How do we then navigate that in a way that's beneficial for the patient, but keeps the cost down for the insurance company, but then elevates the reimbursement rate to provide that physical therapy procedure or that service for that patient? So it is interesting. I think it's a big balancing act, and I don't know where it's going to go, but it's kind of been sputtering for a while. I don't know what you guys see down in Louisiana, but up here, I see more people that end up, you know, at the end of the year, you know, in November, they're like, hey, I want to get the last little bit of therapy in because my benefit resets in January. And listen, you're only halfway through therapy. Well, you know what? I can't afford it when January 1 rolls around. It is.
January 1 rolls around, the deductible kicks back in. So, you know, now it's like, okay, I need to get everything done before the end of the year because then my deductible, I've already met my deductible. So now, you know, my insurance company is paying in 100% now. I mean, I think it's moving. What I'd like to see it move towards is more of a value-based, you know, payment structure. I mean, you're still in this fee for service payment structure. You know, the incentive there is to do more, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're in a fee for service payment, you know, you're not getting reimbursed for the quality of the services you're providing.
Right. It's the amount.
You know, so the more service you provide, the more, you know, more revenue you're going to generate. I'd like to see it move towards more of a value-based, you know, program where if you partner with the insurance company and you're managing, you know, their beneficiaries and you're actually saving them money, then you actually get some, you know, of that money back, you know, and you actually, you know, can actually provide them with a service. You're providing the insurance company with a service. And so if you do a great job, you know, and you're producing great outcomes, the amount you get reimbursed is completely dissociated from the outcomes that you're getting. I mean, yeah, you can benefit from therapy whatsoever, and you're still going to get paid.
Right,
I mean,
right.
You're going to get paid. So there's no payment or bonuses or any kind of consideration about what the outcome is.
Yeah.
What is the patient's outcome? And if you can, you know, someone comes into your clinic and you can rehab them and get them back to work or get them back onto the field, you know, and get them back to the prior level performance faster than your competitor, you should financially benefit from that.
Yeah, 100%. And we talk about outcomes all the time. I think we have one of the largest outcome data registries, I guess, next to the APTA because of the size of the company. And we have like 1.5 million data registry points. And it's, I don't even know the correct, Chuck Thigpen, who's part of, collecting those in our care delivery system and in our analytics department collects that. But that's what they're trying to look at too, is like, if we can show that we have 90 to 95% outcomes that are positive with our patients, then we should be getting more reimbursement, right?
Yeah.
So if you can do that and provide that for the patient's getting what they need every single day. And if you aren't providing it, then you go to the next tier. So there'll be like a tier A, tier B, tier C, kind of like when you go to see a specialist, right? With physicians. So I think that value-based care is the key. And I think if Senator Riley would become Senator Riley, we could have you advocate for that across the healthcare span, right?
That's right.
I can see you. I'd vote for you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Maybe I can be like your press secretary.
Yeah. I mean, we work hard, in our community, to separate ourselves, from the competition in terms of the way that we take care of folks, and the quality of the service that we provide, the customer service. We're constantly on the staff, looking at, okay, what are you doing, in terms of the services you're providing? Are you practicing at the top of your craft? Or are you doing things, that really are not going to make any difference?
Right, right.
The idea is, when the patient comes to you and you have a 45-minute appointment with them, you want to be 45 minutes with that patient, providing them, with quality services to address their needs. I mean, I don't want to see you, it drives me nuts when I go into a clinic and I see a patient exercising on a piece of equipment and the therapist is across the room talking to,
someone else, or on their phone.
But they're talking to their colleagues. And I'm like,
what the hell?
Your patient is in your office and they're waiting for this visit.
Yeah.
And they're
right.
Either on the mat doing exercises or on a piece of equipment. Why are you not right by them? Why are you not by their side, answering their questions, giving them guidance, feedback and reinforcement? Why are you across the clinic talking to your colleagues? I'm like, that's not good.
About what you're doing tonight. It drives me bananas when you go into a clinic, and even if you're observing, I tell them all the time, the best way to describe what you do every day is, think of being a character for Disney. Everybody, you're on stage every single minute of the day. So people see, they hear, they watch, they observe. If someone comes, you have to add that value to the clinic. So if someone comes, or to the patient, when they come to the clinic, you need to be able to provide value to make them want to come back again. So day one, when you meet with them in the evaluation, how are you messaging what their outcome is going to be, what the prognosis is, how long they should be coming in, how many days a week you want to see them, what you're going to do to reach their goals, and then provide them with something that's valuable. So put your hands on the patient day one, provide that manual therapy, make sure that you're providing something that they say, hey, you know what? It's like going to that restaurant that you always go back to.
Yeah.
You know what? They provided great care for me. They learned about me. They know who I am. They're providing great care. I don't want to see someone sitting on a plinth doing TheraBand exercises for their ankle that they could do at home.
Right.
I should be doing manual therapy with them to provide them with something better than a piece of latex-free tubing. So for me, it drives me bananas to see that when they can't even then provide an objective measure, right? Because they haven't done anything with them manually for the last six visits.
Yeah,
drives me nuts.
I'll look at, their attendance rate, for individual providers. I'll look at their attendance rate, what is their cancellation rate? What is their no-show rate? And then inevitably, all the time, the providers that have the best attendance rate, when you go and you actually observe them actually treating patients, they spend all their time with their patient. I mean, they are with their patient throughout the entire session. Providers who have attendance rates, that are, subpar, when you go and you observe them, their patients are over exercising by themselves.
Yeah.
And they're not on the other side of the clinic talking, or they're in their computer, they're in their laptop, and they're doing their documentation in their laptop, not even acknowledging the patient. And it's like, okay,
Yeah, it's a good teaching moment, though. What do you say to a therapist? Now, you probably see it in both ends. You probably see new therapists and even veterans that have been around for a while or are seasoned. What's your conversation with them?
Well, I mean, the idea is, you know, the goal is to motivate the team to achieve the objectives, you know, that the team has set for them, right? So the idea is, you know, our approach is, you know, we don't have a merit-based pay structure, you know, within, you know, our health system, you know, within our department. So, you know, if you are killing it and you're crushing it and your patients are coming in, you know, and you are, you know, you have, you know, over 80% attendance, you know, and you're getting referrals with your name on them, you know, I would love to be able to say there's a way that I can, you know, give you some kind of, you know, benefit from that outside of, you know, my commendation and my appreciation. But the idea is, you know, if we have goals for the clinic, everybody has to be on the same page. So it's like, if you're not pulling your weight for the team, then it's like, okay, I mean, we have to have a conversation.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I mean, you know, you wanted to attend this course, the CEU course, you know, and you want me to pay for that. Well, you know, the thing is, you really haven't been, you know, crushing it lately.
Right. You've been showing up.
Yeah, I need you to get your attendance rate up. You know, and the way you get your attendance rate up, you know, is by having your patients value the services that you're providing. So they will come back.
Right.
And then
right,
if you're a
right.
provider who has great attendance, you know, and your patients, you know, are, you know, filling out satisfaction surveys and showering you with compliments, then when you come to me and say, hey, listen, I want to do this course or I want to do this, like, it's 100%. I want to help you out.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, you're doing your part to help our team be successful. So I want to reward that. I want to reinforce right. that. And the folks who, you know, don't, I said, well, what are you doing here? Do you understand what we're trying to accomplish here? Like, do you want to be a provider of choice in this on this team? Do you want to be a provider of choice in this community? Is that what you value? And if you don't, then this may not be the best place for you.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's what we're trying to accomplish here.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a very interesting because you look at people are getting referred to you because the doctor knows your clinic or knows you, right? But doesn't know everybody in your clinic. I always look at, you know, for young therapists, even ones that have been around for a while, like think of that patient is spending hard earned dollars to come in and see you to get the care that they believe they should get because the doctor said you have to go to that clinic. And then if they don't get it, what are they going to do? The first thing they're going to do when they go back and see the doctor? They suck. They didn't pay attention to me. They're on their phone. They're in their computer. They had too many people on the floor. They weren't paying attention. I could have done those exercises at home.
Right.
Then they show back up to the doctor and they still have a stiff shoulder or they don't have full terminal knee extension from that ACL reconstruction. The doctor calls you and goes, what the fuck are you guys doing over there? Like, that's a patient that I sent to you because you guys provide great care. And then you have to sit down with the therapist then and say, hey, you know, really, like you said, this may not be for you.
Right. I mean, this may not be the team that you're best suited to be on. I mean, you're not meeting the expectations. So let's have a conversation about what our expectations are. And you know, these are the things that, you know, I want you to do. And yeah, I want you to think of this as a profession, as a career. It's not a job.
Yeah.
This is not
a job. You can go work at Dunkin' Donuts. That's a job.
This is not a job.
This is not saying that Dunkin' Donuts is not a good place to work, by the way. If Dunkin' Donuts is listening, I need a couple sponsors. So if you guys want to sponsor me, I'll be happy to take it.
Don't throw shade on Dunks. What part of the country where you live? You don't throw shade on Dunks.
No, I don't. I'm actually sorry, Dunkin's. I'm a Starbucks guy. But what do you guys drink down in Louisiana besides Hurricanes?
We have Starbucks down here, and then we've got a couple of Dunks down here. You know, so, okay. And they've got some big brand down here. It's called Community Coffee. So hospital partners with them, and we get them a community coffee. It does the job.
So you guys have unlimited amounts of coffee during the day to keep you motivated.
We've got unlimited amounts of community coffee.
That's amazing.
It does the job.
That's good. So, you know, we kind of jumped around a little bit today, but I think the big thing is, you know, we talked a lot really about like staff and what the expectations are, and how does mentorship fold into that for you? When you have someone come to work for you, for Lee Riley or for your hospital, how do you guys add the mentorship in? Are young students looking for that mentorship? Is that how they're making a decision on going to work for someone? Or is that something you guys build into your program as far as their, you know, coming on as a new therapist and part of their training?
You know, we ask that question with all of the you know, young staff that we interview, you know, there when we bring them in their last year of school, we ask them, what are you looking for? Like, what are you looking for in an employer? And that's really important to me. You know, what are you looking for? What do you value in an employer? I think it's, you know, it's probably 80% of the time the students will say, you know, I want to be mentored. I want to work in a clinic with more experienced therapists so I can learn from them. You know, they have some perspective. They know this, okay, I know I just finished school. I know I don't know everything. And then occasionally you get the ones that come out and, you know, we interviewed this one young man and I asked him, I said, do you value mentorship? You know, I said, what are you looking for in your first job? You know, we talked about our mentor program and he says, yeah, I don't really need a mentor. If I have a question, I'll just Google it.
You're probably like, well, maybe you're not the right candidate.
I was like, well, that's very interesting. So let me get this straight. If you have a question, you would not go to a more experienced clinician in the clinic. You wouldn't go to any of the board certified clinical specialists. You wouldn't come, you know, to me or to any of the senior staff. You would just Google it. Like, that's very interesting.
Yeah. And there he goes. He's the guy that's on the phone in the clinic. Hey, listen, I got a great physical therapy practice I can refer you to. You can go work over there.
I'm like, good luck with Google.
Yeah. Good luck with your career, by the way.
Not update on Google because Andy needs sponsors. So, you know, Google wants to sponsor Andy.
I do.
We don't want to throw shade on Google. Google does a great job.
Love Google. The Google machine works. You know, it helps us once in a while.
It's a fantastic search engine. So
they do. Amazing. I wish I thought of that too when I was younger.
No shade.
There's a lot of things I wish I thought of as younger when I was younger. For young therapists, or actually, I'm not even a therapist, for young students that want to become a therapist or think they want to become a therapist, physical therapist, or even in the sports medicine as an athletic trainer, because you work so closely with them, what's your message to them on trying to pursue that career? You know, is there something particular that you always try to steer them to, or a place you try to steer them to?
Well, yeah, I think you touched on this earlier. I mean, the fact that now that the PT program has transitioned to a doctoral level, I mean, now you're getting students who are looking to become a doctor at something. So they're going to go to dental school. They're looking to go to medical school, to pharmacy school, you know, PT school, law school. I mean, you're looking at a completely different set of, you know, students, you know, in applicants, you know, than, you know, back in the, you know, the early 90s when we were applying, you know, it was a baccalaureate degree. I mean, it was a baccalaureate degree and you were going to get out and, you know, and the field was growing and you're like, yeah, this is a good profession. I can get a degree and get licensed and start working. Now it's like, you know, now it's a doctoral degree. And so it's a completely different, you know, group of students that you're working with or potential, you know, candidates. And so you have to ask them, what do you really want to accomplish? You're like, what do you want to do? And understand that if you're going to put all this time and effort in, you know, to get your doctorate in this field, and you know, what do you want to get out of this?
Right.
And if you want to make the most money, you need to go to medical school. I mean, like I said, I mean, you need to go to medical school. Or, I mean, if you don't want to commit to that, I mean, if you want to get into healthcare, I mean, we have, you know, physician's assistants, you know, in our health system, you know, who make substantially more than anybody in my department. And they have a master's degree. And so the idea is, you know, you want to become a PA, you know, and you can make, you know, more. I mean, you're not going to go into this field, you know, to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll have a very, and not to say that, you know, you're not going to have a comfortable life. I mean, you'll make a good salary, you know, and we'll pay you well. And you know, you'll have a prosperous career. But if you're thinking, you know, I have a doctorate degree and you need to pay me, you know, $250,000, $300,000 a year.
You're mistaken.
You're crazy.
Right. What they should be doing is going to business school. I mean,
taking a business class or something.
Yeah, right.
I mean, because the idea is, I mean, that's just not a reality.
No, it isn't. It isn't.
You know, and so, you know, if you want to get in the top 1%, you know, you want to, you know, be in that group. I'm like, yeah, I mean, you know, you're probably better off going to medical school.
Yeah. I had working with young athletes my whole career. You know, I've been at Weston for 26, almost 27 years now. And same physical therapy practice. It just, you know, we changed ownerships in the same amount of time. I have had some athletes that have gone on to PT school, gone on to medical school. I had one young athlete that just finished his master's degree. He got his undergrad in athletic training from Penn State. I bumped into his mother last week. He came and saw me beginning of the fall. He was finishing up his senior year, his graduate degree at UNC. And I think he ended up getting his master's in athletic training as well. But his mom said he wants to go to medical school now. So he's kind of like come full circle and wanted to do that. You know, talking to some of these young kids, it's, you know, again, what do you want to be? What do you want to do? What do you want to provide? Knowing that we're in the business of providing healthcare, like solutions for people. So we're there to serve the community. We're there to make sure that we provide life-changing physical, you know, therapy for these people that actually need it. And you got to make sure that you understand that, you know what, you, like you said, you're not going to make $200,000-$300,000 a year as a staff member in a physical therapy practice, because one, there's a lot of things that have to have reimbursement needs to be where it needs to be, whatever collections you need to make, the company needs to run or the office needs to run. It's just not a reality. There are some, I was talking to Chris Haverty, who's, you know, was the former dean of LaSalle College, the health sciences program. And she had said, she goes, you know, I know a lot of strength conditioning specialists that work in the collegiate professional levels that make more than athletic trainers and physical therapists as strength conditioning specialists. But kind of where is the value there, right? So she goes, I kind of put it back on the professions a little bit. And she's like, I'm not knocking the professions, but the advocacy of your profession and how do you make that valuable? And it goes back to you made a great point, outcomes. How can we provide value-based outcomes that can show that our value is worth more than what we're getting paid? And it's going to take a long time because we've been trying this for years. I mean, when we were in school, in undergrad, they were talking about this, you know. And I remember you finished, I think we were graduating. You go, I'm going to stay for another year and get my master's. And I think you end up starting, I'm not sure if you finished the master's at Northeastern. You and Katie ended up moving.
So, you know, I didn't finish the master's at Northeastern because I had another opportunity that came up.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a matter of, you know, that opportunity, like I said, you know, I had the opportunity to go and run that practice, you know,
yeah.
The idea was, okay, well, you know, do I capitalize on this, you know, opportunity, you know, and learn from this, or, you know, do I stay, you know, in the master's program, which of them, you know, was the better opportunity. And so I just, you know, to get out of that program. But I mean, even in athletic training, I mean, the athletic training schools in Louisiana are all transitioning to master's degrees now.
They're going now to DATs too.
Right.
They're moving up, and it's, you know, ATs aren't getting reimbursed. It's just they're elevating the practice, right? They're trying to add more, you know, research based, you know, classes and trying to add more education on the back end. But it's interesting. I haven't really kind of looked at any of those curriculums as of recent. But I had one former student that went through a program at, where did he go? I think he went to might have went to Philly, maybe he went to Temple. I don't know where he went, but he did end up finishing, and he said it was good for his ability to be able to, you know, negotiate where he was in his career. But I always say education is never wasted. I mean, I waited. I got my undergrad in athletic training. I went back and my master's in leadership and healthcare management from Northeastern. Then I went back and, you know, I got my PTA degree because I wanted to stay in the clinic, and that was really the only way I could stay in the clinic. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't go back to PT school because just financially, I just couldn't do it and stay out of work when I was rooted at Weston. And then I went back and got my another master's because I had nothing better to do with my time in sports science, applied sports science analytics, because I'm looking at, you know, what's the rest of my life look like in my career after I leave athletic training or after I leave physical therapy? How can I then market myself to be able to provide my knowledge? And how do I make that better for people that I'm going to be dealing with? So I always say it's never wasted. It's how are you going to evolve and keep evolving in your profession or within the profession you're in to make yourself more valuable. So,
yeah, I mean, I think you have to just have a passion. I mean, you have to be passionate. I mean, like I said, this is not a job. Yeah, it's not a job. This is a career.
Right.
You're committing yourself, you know, to being a professional, to being a career, and assuming all the responsibilities associated with it. You know,
yeah.
You don't go through all this, you know, and consider it a job. That's the thing. I don't think, you know, I think the medical schools do a great job. And I don't think physicians graduate from medical school and consider being a doctor a job.
No, not at all.
I think it's,
I think they need to change that message in school. I think they have to start teaching that a little bit more for the young students that are coming in and what that actually means. But, you know, hopefully they start to do that.
Yeah.
To kind of close out today, I always like to ask a fun question. And see what the reaction is to the guests. And if you look back and you meet your 23-year-old self, or even, you know, 19-year-old self or whatever that is, you know, you're in college, what would you tell yourself? Do you think that would be anything different than what your career path has chosen for you?
I mean, I think I would just tell myself to just take time to stop and smell the roses. You know, I mean, the idea is now, yeah, the things that I tell, you know, the staff now is like, you know, enjoy, take advantage of the opportunities in front of you, you know, live in the moment, you know, and take advantage of the time that you're in. Don't be so focused, you know, on your next move, you know, that you miss, you know, you miss out on the things, you know, that are currently right in front of you. You know, and so, I mean, I think when I was younger, if you had asked me, you know, hey, you know, do you think that, you know, when you're 51 years old, you'll be married with three kids living in Louisiana? I was like, no, not at all. I mean, that's not, when I was 23, that's not where I saw myself, you know?
Right.
You know, and so, I mean, I thought for sure, you know, that I would be, you know, I'd own my own business, you know, own my own, you know, health club, wellness facility, you know, do rehab in it, you know, but also promote health and wellness. And, you know, I remember when you and I used to go to Gold's Gym. We'd go to Gold's, you know, and work out. And I was like, yeah, man, I want to own a Gold's Gym. I want to own a gym. I want to be a gym member. I want to be a gym owner. You know, I want to help people, you know, get jacked and, you know, and get healthy. You know, I mean, so yeah, I wouldn't have predicted, you know, that I would be where I am now. And there's no way I could have even, you know, thought about having the career that I've had. I mean, at 23. I mean, what I thought I wanted, and then what actually, you know, I've been able to create, just, no, not even close.
Yeah. I mean, that's, again, it's like blink of an eye. We were graduating high school together, right? And now we're 50, 51. Yeah. It's like flash gone. Like, what just happened, you know, the last 25, 30 years? And, you know, and if we stayed in our, you know, paths of careers in high school and you became a painter and I was a carpenter, we might've been working together as contractors.
Yeah.
We would have been making a lot more money, but we probably wouldn't be as happy as we are today. I have to tell you, I'm very happy at what I do every day. I feel like I'm making a difference with the people that I work with and the young athletes. And we see that with, you know, when they come back or when they call. I made this point in one of my other episodes that young athletes, are they leave and go to college and they'll text me, they'll email me, they'll call me about an injury they had. And I said, wait a sec, you've been an athletic trainer at school. Yeah, but I don't really trust them. I trust you because you helped me through this, this, and this. Right. And that makes you feel good, right? Because we are in a thankless, really, career, right? I think there's some thank that comes with it, but I probably wouldn't change anything with what I'm doing today. And I probably would tell myself the same thing, like you said, listen, take your time, ask more questions, learn more, meet more people, and try to provide more care. So, all said.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I think, you know, obviously, if you make a difference in someone's lives, you know, there's a quote that says, you know, people don't remember what you say, you know, they might remember what you do, but they will remember how you made them feel, you know.
Yeah, 100%.
And so, you know, if you make them feel important and you make them feel valued and you make them feel that you care, you know, they're going to remember you. I mean, that's going to have an imprint. You know, the words that come out of your mouth and the things that you do to them, you know, may not have as lasting of an impact, but how you make them feel when you're with them will.
Yeah, 100%. And that's a great message. And I hope, you know, we have some listeners, young therapists that tune into this episode and hear that, because I think that's a great quote that will, I think, be long lasting for them to maybe think a little bit differently about how they perform as young therapists or athletic trainers. Hey, Lee, I truly appreciate your time. I know it's a Sunday. You probably have get home and get to dinner and hang out with the family. I do appreciate it. You're the man.
I think this is great.
I hope to see you soon if you're back up in Boston. It was truly an honor to meet with you today. Thanks, man.
Well, I appreciate the invite, and I like what you're doing here, and I wish you all the success and good fortune associated with it. Hopefully we can get you a Dunks sponsorship. You know,
I think community coffee would be good.
You know, maybe throw some Google in there. Maybe get some.
What about your healthcare system? They might want to sponsor it. I could use a co-host, you know, if you want to jump in and be so great. All right, man. I appreciate it.
All right,
thanks, buddy.
All right.
See ya.
Thank you for tuning in to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. This is your creator and host, Andrew Rizza. If you enjoyed the content from today's episode, give us a like, leave a comment, and share on social media. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram at Behind Sports Med Podcast, on X under AJR Sports Sci, or check out our websites at ajrsportscience.podbean.com and at ajrsportscience.com. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel at AJR Sports Science. Stay tuned for our next episode.